Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
So it looks like we've got Vinny and Peter. I see Terry Canada.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'll wait just a minute more for, is Gary Wendt on the phone? Maybe just wait just a minute longer. I know that John Benton, I think, was also going to try to join via Teams as well. Hey, Peter, I saw you on national TV.
Yeah, I'm going to wait a little longer before I go up and congratulate him next time. my phone blew up that night. I was getting all these texts and like, I saw you on TV. I'm like, okay, really? And then somebody sent me a screenshot of it. And I was like, oh, my God, that was a little, maybe I should have waited.
Was that for the game?
Huh?
What was that for?
The LSU-FSU game.
Oh, awesome. Did you tackle the coach?
Well, we did a man hug right at the 50-yard line, right at the end of the game.
I like it. What a game.
Yeah. It was way too close. It shouldn't have been that close.
No.
I mean, we're leading 24-10 with 8 minutes to go, and it came down to that. It's like,
I know.
Anyway, at least we got the W. You guys got the W too, Vinny.
Yeah, I was sitting in that. I was sitting right in that end zone where Anthony scored the last touchdown. So that was a good. That was a good day.
That's cool. Yeah, it's a good win.
Yeah, it's good to see Florida getting some wins here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the first time all three teams have won the same weekend since 2016 or 2017, somebody said.
Well, that's crazy.
that is crazy.
Well, I guess maybe, Vinny, if I guess we're about five after now, it seems like I think we at least have a quorum. So if you wanted to call the meeting to order and we get started, it's up to you.
Yeah, let's go ahead and start the meeting, which is great. I'll just sort of from an introductory standpoint, I will go through and name off the compensation committee, which I believe is myself, Vinny Olmstead, Peter Collins, and Gary Wendt, who hopefully jumps on soon here. I think the great thing about this particular committee is we've been together, I think, 5 years now, which has been at least from a continuity standpoint, which is excellent. And then I believe you had mentioned a couple of other guests, Terry Canada. Welcome, Terry, who's also on the IC.
And thank you.
Yes. And John Benton may chime in, who is also very, very welcome. Let's get rid of the perfunctory stuff. So hopefully everybody's had a chance to read the minutes of September 14th, 2021. And I would make a motion to approve those minutes. They looked accurate and appropriate to me. So looking for second. And
I'll make a motion.
All right. All approved. Aye. All right. So moved. So 5 years of compensation committee, and it seems like there's something interesting every single year. 2 years ago, there was a technicality that resulted in no variable compensation for either the director or the team. Last year, there were some things that happened with Ash and his retirement. So from the process of providing both subjective and quantitative to Ash, it was sort of moot because of his retirement. And this year, I'm not sure everybody knows, but the interim, so Lamar, the interim ED is not qualified for either the subjective or the quantitative compensation, which is interesting. Lamar and I had a conversation. I thought it would be very constructive to still go through the process, and I do think there's a role for this committee, which I'll go through in a few minutes, which I think is important. As a reminder, especially for some of the folks, I know staff is there, a number of folks who are familiar with this, Terry, and I think most know, there's two components to, first of all, our charge is exclusively to provide the subjective feedback to the director which is comprises of 15% of the variable pay of that position. 85% of that is quantitative. So, you know, it's our job typically is to have Mercer send out some review information, go through it, provide feedback. Mercer then comes back and summarizes it for us, and we make a recommendation on what percentage of the subjective pay should go to the director. This year, however, because Lamar's interim, there isn't that process. And he is not eligible for either the subjective or quantitative, which I find very ironic, because if he wasn't promoted to this interim position, he would have been eligible, and the team looks like they're on track to actually meet at least the quantitative portion of this year's goals. So I think it's important to point out those processes and the quirkiness of this. There's another quirky part that I'll probably have Lamar point out or go through in a few minutes, which is, even though this year his team is performing and the entire team is performing, there is some sort of stipulation or rule that in the event, even if you overperform significantly, if you don't have positive returns for two consecutive quarters, until you get positive returns for two consecutive quarters, his team cannot get their variable pay. So even though they're outperforming their goals and outperforming the market, there is a stipulation that the team will not get their pay. This quarter isn't looking great just because of the overall market, and we have a lot of probably bumpiness ahead, which means that this team, there's a high likelihood that this team may not, A, see their variable pay, or may not see it for some time. So that's sort of, again, when I look at what Lamar's job and what formerly Ash's job is, it's to keep the right people in the seat so that we continue to outperform. And from just my personal opinion, being on many compensation committees, you know, the structure here, it almost makes it counterintuitive and counter-incentivized. So I'll pause there. Lamar, you can maybe, you know, just clarify if I have those facts correct. And then if anybody has questions, I think it's a fair conversation. And then I think we should get into a little bit of, a debate. I think the next piece should be, we'll let Lamar go through the letter that he sent across, which I thought was well written, and then we'll have some, you know, discussion from Lamar. So I'll pause there.
Well, thanks, Benny. And I think at a high level, everything you pointed out is correct, and we can get into a little bit of this later on as we talk about sort of the compensation update, specifically where we talk about sort of where things stand on an incentive compensation basis and where things stand on a salary basis as well. But yes, this plan is a very complicated plan, and I know that I know you've had a lot of experience with it. I know Peter has had. I think Peter may have been around since it began, but of course it came out of a lot of controversy and anxieties, because it was a meaningful variable rate compensation, and so it came with a lot of oversight and strings, so to speak. And one of them was that if the fund had negative performance in the final fiscal year of a 3-year period, even if it was outperformance, if it was negative, then there had to be two positive quarters of performance before amounts could be paid out. And I think that the thinking was that not sort of sending the wrong message if people were to get paid while the fund generated negative absolute performance. I think there was probably some debate around that at the time, and there probably could be some more debate about that going forward, because I think there's probably views across the map on the wisdom of that. But in any event, that is where what the plan is today. I would say overall, and like you said, it's things kind of start and end with performance. And I continue to be incredibly proud of the team that we have here. and that they continue to perform in some very challenging circumstances. So just for numbers, you know, calendar year to date, preliminary numbers that we have today, calendar year to date, the fund is down, the defined benefit pension plan, which is our largest mandate, is down 9.9%. Our benchmark is down 10.07%, so we're still ahead of benchmark by 17 basis points. When you look at on a 1 and 3 year basis, though, for the 1 year period ending June 30, the number is minus 6.27, but our benchmark was down 9.05%, so that's 278 basis points of positive relative performance, even though for the fiscal year we were down a little over 6.25%. The 3 year period of time, though, our performance is a positive 7.74%, while the benchmark is at a 5.74%. That's 200 basis points of outperformance. So over a 3 year period of time, beat the benchmark by 200 basis points. And unfortunately, because of the way the plan is designed, that is going to require, because we were negative in this past fiscal year, that's going to require some deferral. But so, yes, you're correct. Going to sort of the switching gears to the letter that I sent around, again, just really trying to kind of hold to, even though the feedback from a formality perspective in terms of recommendations to the trustees with respect to qualitative compensation is not on the table. Vinny and I briefly discussed, and I think he's absolutely right, it's still very good, I think, for you all to get sort of a summary of the things that we've done over the last year. And it's been a lot. There's been a lot that's been going on over the last year, not the least of which was a war in Europe, and energy prices and inflation has really taken off. And so we started to see a lot of that play out in the markets. And that's, you know, sort of why you're seeing this sort of this pretty intense negative action since the start of the calendar year, and where again you sort of see some of the performance from the rest of the team. So you know we've sort of lived and died by public equities over the last 10 years, and they have outperformed quite a number of the other asset classes, and now both the public markets, both public equities and fixed income, are underperforming on a relative basis simply because you've got inflation that's kind of repricing cash flows from the equity side and the income from the fixed income side. So you're seeing some correlations increase there and on a downward trajectory, unfortunately. But then we have the private market asset classes, which are doing very, very well. And so each of our strategic and private equity and real estate continue to do a fantastic job in executing on their objectives and just kind of keeping the total fund in a good spot. So again, really proud of the team. I think they're doing a fantastic job. We have sort of, in addition to kind of just making sure that we continue to perform and dealing with some of the market fluctuations with inflation and Ukraine, we sought some legislative changes this year. Unfortunately, we're not successful, and as a result, we still stay above our alternative investments cap. We've talked about that previously. Certainly on the agenda to come back this next cycle from the legislature to revisit that. As we will see next meeting, I think is the next IAC meeting, we're going to start talking a little bit about asset liability studies, which I would expect would lead into some asset allocation conversations for the December meeting. And we mentioned in the previous asset liability studies that an increased allocation to alternative investments has a positive benefit to the plan from a risk return, a risk adjusted return perspective. So that was something we had hoped to execute on this past legislative session. We're going to continue to try to execute on that again this legislative session. So that would be some things that you would see. And of course, you know, we've been in the news in terms of us and our trustees just trying to underscore the fact that we are here to seek the economic best interest of our beneficiaries. And we've taken some steps to underscore that as well. We have also sort of back in sort of going back to some of the asset liability, asset allocation conversations, something I'm very excited to kind of get to some real feedback on that we can bring to the IAC is the results of the structural review of strategic investments. And we have been working hard internally here with John Benton's group and investment policy asset allocation and a strategic investment asset class as well to take a look at the asset class. It's been around for a while, and just making sure that we take a good look at the objectives and see if we've got any conflicting objectives there, and if so, how would we seek to resolve them on a go-forward basis in a way that can continue to have the asset class be accretive to the overall plan. So I think we've there's been a lot of effort there, and hoping to have some concrete recommendations to the IAC on that. So I think that's you know pretty much it, and you know at least in terms of the kind of the overall mission issues, you know, people and infrastructure and operations. I've certainly got a lot in the letter with respect to infrastructure and operations. People, you know, and you can see some of this in the slides that we included in the third tab there. Turnover has increased a little bit. It's largely increased in the non-asset class areas. The non-incentive eligible areas, a pretty precipitous spike up there. Asset classes have been remained relatively stable. We've continued to see quite a bit of retirements. And as we've also pointed out, we've got a number of folks in management who are eligible for retirement either currently or in the near future. So that would be something that we would continue to be sort of at risk for or you know folks retiring out of service. The market's been a little bit challenging for us. Our positions have stayed open longer. We continue to get good applicants. I think the number of decreased significantly, but we continue to get good candidates, and we are continuing to fill positions are just taking longer. I'm hoping that that will turn around. We've had some progress on a number of key positions here recently. Got some leads on a couple of key positions as well. So it does seem like things are kind of turning a corner for us. I'll keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best there. We did lose, of course, Allison Romano earlier in the year, recruited away from us to the city of San Francisco. But fortunately, you know, knock on wood, that's been the largest sort of asset class turnover there. Again, our folks, I continue to just be, I can't say enough good things about them. They come to work every day, with a full understanding of what the mission is, and continue to perform. And you know, a lot of smiles around the office. So very glad to see that. I'll stop there. If there's any questions, I'm happy to go into the letter or talk about anything else anybody wants to ask a question about.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a couple comments? You're right. I was, I think Mar's right. I was on the IAC when we first, when we were finalizing this comp plan. And, it took a couple of years. And as you can imagine, with the size of the pension fund and the size of the salaries and the size of the, just the size of the number, no matter how small the percentage was, the size of the number is still going to always be big when dealing with big numbers. And so there was a lot of sensitivity around paying out bonuses if there were negative returns. From my standpoint, I didn't think it mattered. As long as we were outperforming our benchmarks and we're the ones that, you know, help set that benchmark, and if the team's outperforming the benchmark, I have no problem standing up to anybody and saying, hey, they did their job. And if you go back and look, you know, I'm looking at the spreadsheet, we had COVID 1 year that caused no bonus, right? Hard to put COVID on anybody working at the SBA, right? We had a war and an incredible market disruption. Hard to put that on anybody in the SBA. The test is, in my mind, how did we perform on a relative basis to our benchmark during that time? And if the team did a really bad job, or if they had it so mismanaged, or there was too much risk, or what have you, then yeah, I'm fine with no bonus. But we haven't had that. We haven't had that in any of these cases. So it's hard to, and I agree, I mean, we have to compensate people, and if they're doing a good job, you know, we need to look at this. You know, if it happened one time, COVID, okay, that's a crazy event, and, you know, okay. But when it, like you opened the meeting, when it's continually happening, year after year, then we've got a broken comp structure, in my opinion. And so I would be all in favor of opening this up. I don't know what we can do in the interim on that, and we'll get into, I'm sure, I don't want to get ahead of where we're going to go, where you're going to go with the meeting, but I don't know what we can do in the interim without going back and having the trustees update it, but I think we owe it to the trustees, and I think we certainly owe it to the employees to fix some of these, I don't want to say they're errors, but to fix some of these nuances in the comp system that keep coming up when again the relative performance is strong.
Yeah, Peter, I think it's those are appropriate words, and I concur. When I look at what Lamar's job is, performance, like, not in particular order, but it's performance one, and in order to perform, retention and recruiting are so key. And I'm not sure we're not handicapping. If I were in Lamar's shoes, I would say you're tying one hand behind my back when 2 out of 3 years I can't provide any incentive pay to my people. Oh, and by the way, as the interim director, I make less this year because I'm not eligible for this. And by the way, now we're in, I think, fiscal year 2023, Lamar still is not eligible for any incentive pay. And so I think as you know, a compensation committee, when I look at what's important, it's we're outperforming and we need to stay stable. And we may not be able to change it, but we should certainly voice our opinions on we shouldn't be tying one hand behind the back of you know, whomever's running this important part of the state's functions on keeping and retaining and recruiting. So I'm echoing what you said there.
I think I would welcome Lamar or whoever would do this a memo from them outlining why 2 out of the last 3 years we haven't gotten it. And I'd like to send that to Mercer, and I'd like Mercer to give us some suggestions, or maybe compare that to some other plans out there. Because if I was a trustee, I would say, okay, well, what are other people doing, right? How are other people having this same thing? And if they are, then, you know, are they doing something about it, or are they not? Because they've got a better designed plan. So I would love an explanation, you know, a little bit more detail on each of these circumstances, what happened, some of these, like I said, nuances, and then I'd love to see Mercer take a look at that and come back to us on what they would suggest.
Gary Wendt has a suggestion also. And it's a question, I don't know if it can be answered, but while I agree with everything that's been said, and we are in, you know, and these are extraordinary times. No compensation committee ever forecast what we've been through or could perceive it. But I think my question is always, when I work with these government organizations, is what can we do? Does anybody know what if we just decided to arbitrarily make bonuses to people who we think deserve bonuses? Can we do that? I don't know. So my question is, who can tell us what authorities we do have as an advisory group? And I think they're slim.
I think the only thing we can do is make a recommendation on the subjective 15% of the director's incentive pay, and that's it. And that, you can correct me, Lamar, and that we have historically, though, you know, sent recommendations to the trustees, which I like Peter's idea of, you know, maybe this is a worthwhile discussion right now, which is, again, whether we have the authority or not, there is a risk recruiting and retention here from the, you know, CIO down. I do think we need to let the trustees or whoever have the ability to make this decision or change or make a decision, we need to voice that very, very clearly. And Lamar, correct me if I'm wrong and what we can do. And I love the idea, Peter, of getting further, you know, evidence or further benchmarking so that when we do, you know, at least highlight the concerns, we have some evidence there.
Yeah, I mean, we paid Mercer a lot of money to help us design this plan, and it clearly has some holes. So they should be involved in helping us plug those holes.
Vinny, if I may just jump in for just a second.
Please.
Absolutely. You know, here all three of you, I think a lot of great points, and certainly, Peter, we will undertake kind of this memo and engage with Mercer and take a look at, to get them to take a look at from a comparative standpoint. I think that's something they have done that from time to time. They've done it a couple of years ago. So I think they're very versed in sort of where we sit relative to other plans. They've got the data. They've got the information. I think they can turn that back around. And in terms of Gary's question, there is you know, the board and the subcommittee of the board may not necessarily have any direct legal authority to dole out bonuses, but what you all absolutely have and is what is incredibly important, has been so important throughout this entire process going all the way back to 2013, is, you know, you all speak with authority on these issues in the sense that you all run large investment organizations and understand firsthand, you know, what it means to recruit and retain talent and how important talent is in the overall performance. And so I think that is absolutely and that importance really can't be understated or overstated in that sense. So I mean it's truly important to, you know, to the extent you all have strong feelings about this, you know, saying so, being on the record, and to the extent you can reach out to principals and convey that message as well, is incredibly helpful. And in the meantime, we will seek to be as responsive as we can to the very concerns you raise, because they are obviously accurate and material, you know, issues. We have a great team of people here. I'd like to believe they like where they work and who they work with, but there's just a reality of the fact that any number of them could be recruited away at substantially more, and I think that creates a vulnerability. We've known that for a while. We've done the best we can to try to even the playing field. I think we've made some we've made tremendous progress. But from a total cash comp, and this is something Mercer has come back to this time, you know, again, from a total cash compensation perspective, from the investment class, I mean, we are below our peers. And that starts to weigh on certainly me, and I think you all as well, in an environment where we're starting to see significant pressures, wage pressures, significant pressures in recruitment and retention. We're experiencing, as I said before, the fact that we've got a number of open positions are staying open for longer. We're getting fewer and fewer applicants. So, it's a little bit of a canary in the coal mine perspective. So taking these views is something that I certainly take seriously, and we'll work on the memo and engage with Mercer and try to set a time frame for them to provide a report back.
And I think from there, then we write a memo with our, with, you know, just conveying our perspective. I mean, I don't remember the exact numbers in the report, but just the number of people retiring in the next 4 to 5 years is going to make this even more difficult and complex. So I think it's important to convey that. So I think from a next step standpoint, we speak with Mercer, and then we put together our own memo and send over our, you know, our concerns on that front.
Gary Wendt has another suggestion, which is that Lamar, even though you have the title acting CEO, you're the only CEO we've got, and I'd like to I'd like you to tell us exactly what you think the compensation strategy should be and payments to your important people. I'd like you to tell us that as well as Mercer.
And this would be in the memo, in the memo back.
Well, I don't care where you do it, but get it done. I want to know what you think we should do.
Okay.
Look, Lamar, you're the one. This is Vinny. You're the one that has to retain and recruit right now. And if you have one hand tied behind your back, to Gary's point, tell us what you think we need to do in order to not. And again, if you lose 10 great people out of the 57, it's going to impact our performance. And yeah. If a number retire and you can't recruit because we're X percent lower than our peers, then it's going to impact performance. And so I think that's, you know, just understanding, you know, your perspective on that. It's funny because the rest of the world's compensation is going up and employee scarcity is going up. And so just, you know, then if you take, you know, perhaps our compensation plan that isn't perfect, it just makes it tough.
Fair point, there are a couple of things I think certainly some things we can do, and we can talk a little bit more about them in the compensation update. One of the things that we have continued to work on, and where I think we need to continue to work on more, is base pay, and we will be implementing a revised pay plan here this December, which moves the midpoints on average about 6.5%. It's higher at certain positions than others. It just depends. We constantly survey the market, and I do think from a base pay standpoint, we are pretty competitive. And I think that's number one. Remaining competitive in that sense is something that I think we just have to do and need to do and continue to do. And been very fortunate that we've had the support of our trustees on that. So we've sought and received budgeted funds to continue to make progress on base pay. I think on the incentive comp side of things, I absolutely think some of these nuances to the plan need to be revisited. I do think that having, you know, two consecutive quarters of positive outperformance is actually a negative for the plan. Just as John Benton had run some numbers to see, you know, well, how often does it take? Well, sometimes it can take up to 2 years. I mean, going back to the financial crisis, it took us up to 2 years before we had two consecutive quarters of positive performance. So that's not motivating people, and I think that's actually sort of, you know, counterproductive in that sense. So I do think there's some changes that we can make for the plan to simplify certain aspects of it and make it more responsive, so that, you know, people aren't looking at this as kind of a, you know, it could become counterproductive. So there's certainly some things that we can simplify on the plan in that respect. And then maybe it is time to take a look and see from a market perspective, do we need to recommend a material change in the payout if we're at a point where we need to do that. So I do think getting Mercer's input on that would be helpful in terms of coming back to the committee with more concrete recommendations there. But those are two recommendations certainly right out of the gate that I feel like we just have got to do, and I feel like we are making progress on.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my last comment on this is it's not motivating at all. If we have a negative quarter, then the employees know that we got to have at least two more positive quarters, and they know that there's nothing that they can do to make it positive, right? We're like the Titanic, right? We can't turn and just beat the market all the time. We can beat our benchmark, but we can't be positive all the time if the market's down a lot. So it's got to be frustrating, you know. You get to the end of the quarter, we lost money. Okay, I got to go two more quarters. The end of the next quarter, yep, we lost money. Oh, well, we got to go two more quarters. And that, to me, is a major flaw.
Gary Went would like to know how soon this can be done.
Well, let's tell you what, we can have to engage with Mercer, but I would expect by March of 23, we can have a report back to you all. I think the next meeting is December. There's going to be a lot on the plate there from an asset allocation perspective. We've got a lot of work that I think we've been doing there, and we certainly want to get the IEC's involvement. We've got legislative initiatives as well upcoming, so I would hate to kind of bog down that progress here. In the meantime, I think we can get Mercer involved, and we would seek to try to come back with some to the committee by March.
I would just say on that, Lamar, just a piece of mentoring here. If you have trustees like you are, advisory board members like you do right now, telling you we got to fix this and we're on the side of your ability to compensate the employees, don't wait till March. Let's figure out how to do it quicker.
Okay. I think there's two pieces, right? There's the Mercer piece, and then there's at least there's three pieces. There's the Mercer piece, there's your recommendations, and there's our recommendations. And again, I don't know if retention is impacted or recruiting is impacted between now and March. That seems like forever, because if I don't get my incentive pay again 2 out of 3 years or it's in jeopardy, I certainly am not that excited about, I may like my job, I already think I'm underpaid, but I'm not that excited. I think there's, and this is a very competitive job market. I think we need to move quickly, as Peter said, and I know that Gary wouldn't disagree. That's why I asked the question when. Maybe we would send our feedback to the trustees stating that we were having Mercer come back with some comparables. But I think the real issues is retention and recruiting, which increases performance.
Did the trustees meet every month or every week?
They meet once a quarter at this point. It used to be more frequently, but this group is centered on once a quarter. Okay, so the next meeting would be in December. So. But I certainly absolutely take your point. Absolutely fair points. So we will move that timeline up. And just immediately, commence and certainly try to get something turned back around to the group as soon as possible.
Yeah. It's not like Mercer doesn't know. They don't need to go do some long study. They're going to say anecdotally, these are what this is what your peers are doing. We don't need a expensive study to this. And it's not hard to know. You're already under benchmark in salaries. 2 out of the last 3 years, you haven't been able. Well, 2 years ago, COVID hit. You weren't able to pay incentives. This year, you're at least a few quarters away. And that retention across the board in every, financial position is tough right now, and that there's some risk to us continuing to perform if we have high churn and a hard time recruiting. So I think delivering that message to the trustees for their December meeting, unless, Lamar, you think there's some risk to it, I think that would be our recommendations. I won't speak for Peter and Gary, but I think we have a little more sense of urgency given the negative impact. Recruiting is not going to get easier.
No, we should have something ready for December. And Lamar, you have to tell us what that is. Is it increasing the salaries? Is it giving one-time bonuses now? These are unusual times, and we need to do some unusual things. And so please let your mind be open as you think about what we can do. But let's try to get, if we can, Vinny, if we can get something ready for the December trustee meeting, I think we should try to do that.
Okay. Certainly, hear the charge, and we'll make that happen.
All right. Well, let's not belabor the conversation. I think we have some clear direction. Lamar, we will look. We'll look to you to come back to us on sort of an approach for, you know, for December. I'm not sure we gave you great feedback on your evaluation. I sort of look at it like this. We're outperforming. You lost a key person, Allison, and we're still performing. I think that was sort of a, you know, probably more than just a being recruited away situation. You still have your major folks that are in place, which is a good testament to what you have. And to be blunt, you'll find a lot out when we determine whether you're interim or permanent. Hopefully, permanent here, and maybe October we'll get some more information then. And I think from a subjective, performance next year, assuming you're in this role, you'll get a lot more feedback by going through the appropriate process with Mercer. But for right now, it seems like, again, given the performance and where we are with people, overall, I think you're doing a good job. There's always things to improve, but Ukrainian war, COVID and all this other stuff, there's a lot of curveballs being thrown at you. So I think we're supportive of what you're doing. And I'll let Peter and Gary comment, and then we'll try to close up.
The last thing I would say on that is I distinctly remember the conversation about interim, right? Because in most cases, interim doesn't last as long as we've had interim here, right? And it was just somebody, we didn't want somebody to get a windfall because they held a position for a couple months, right? Till we hired their replacement or till they were named permanent. That did not, Gary made a great point. Like, you're the only director we have. At the very least, you should have still been eligible for the old job, you know, the compensation that the old job that you had, and not be penalized because you took interim. It'll cost you several hundred thousand dollars, which is, maybe we should have thought that one through. But I don't think it took into account this situation.
I don't have anything else to say.
All right.
I'm just ready to go. We got to do something.
All right. Any other audience comments? Any other information? If not, let's close this down.
No, thanks.
Terry?
Doesn't look like there's anybody here at the public meeting to provide questions or comments, so I think that's nobody's here on that end.
So we'll adjourn.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and we'll see you all next week.
Okay, great.
See you guys.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye.